Hi, this is Christine Griggs.
And I'm Shelley Blevins.
And we're just two crazy old widows who decided to start a podcast.
And by old, she means middle-aged. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Dare to Live podcast. I'm Shelley.
And I'm Christine.
We have a special guest today. Oh, I'm so excited for this. I don't know, I feel like it's been a while. Super excited to catch up. We have Julia Warren with us, so thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, y'all. I'm really so glad to be back. It's just so good to catch up and sit down and talk with you guys. It always warms my heart with the laughs and the relatability. It's great. So thanks for asking me to come back on again.
Definitely. So the first thing we have to talk about, your post today, your story that referred back to last March 1st. I mean, holy cow.
That's not a coincidence. I mean, that's just...
I still can't even believe it. Like, chills went all the way down to my feet.
Isn't that wild? I didn't even really cognize that because, like I said, those memories pop up on Instagram. Like, oh, what you posted a year ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, because on March 1st, a year ago, is when I sat down with the judge and started the whole probate thing. So when I had met with the medium back in December, and she had clearly expressed, like, he keeps saying March, that everything's going to be taken care of in March. Everything's going to be resolved in March. That's the assumption, like the tie that I made, you know, like, oh, we're starting it. Like, he was right. But as y'all know, and many people know, it took up until now, a year later, for it to be done. And literally on Monday, I got the email from my lawyer being like, hey, it's done. The estate's officially closed. Like, best of luck, all the things. And so when that popped up today, I'm like, holy goodness. Like, he knew. Like, he knew and was telling me, and little impatient me was like, oh, you mean right now? But
like today?
Yeah, like, okay. But no, he meant where we're at right now, which just blows my mind.
Oh my gosh. I just got chills again.
Yeah.
Yeah. He, you know, we were just with family back in Arizona. They live in Northern Arizona, and that's actually where Doug and I were married and where I spread some of his ashes. And it's a really special place to me because that's where we really fell in love. And I really feel him closely there. And I just being there, we were there for 10 days in the snow, and the kids and I had so much fun. And it's just all these little moments. I know y'all get them too, that I'm like, they really are so deeply ingrained with us in different places and different moments. And it's just, it's so comforting.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's just, wow. I mean, that story.
Well, do we know the whole story? I mean, do we need to kind of give a little background of the story?
About the March, the alignment
right.
with March.
Yeah. I'm not sure if people would know exactly what we were talking about.
Okay.
Yes, I can give you guys that, and you can, yes. What? So basically, it would have been December of 21, so only a few months after Doug died, I was offered to meet with a medium. It was gifted to me, and when I met with her, you know, I went into that pretty skeptical, you know, excited, but skeptical, like I feel like most people do when they meet with a medium.
Yeah, I was the same way. Yep.
Yeah, like... she could have Googled all of this and known all this information.
Oh my God, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's exactly what Shelley said when I told her about the medium. She's like, are you sure she didn't just Google you or something?
Well, that's the day and age we live in.
Sure.
I mean, you can find out so much about anybody online. So I felt the same way you did. And so when I met with her, I mean, there was a lot of beautiful confirmation that it was for sure Doug. I mean, intimate details that, I mean, there would have been no way of her knowing. And when we were talking that day, he kept referring back to March. And she was like, I don't know. He just keeps saying everything is going to come together in March, or everything will be resolved. She's like, he keeps circling back to March. Like, does that mean anything to you? And so in the moment, I was like, no, like, we have no special dates in March. Like, there's no birthdays or anniversaries or anything. And so she had me write that down. And so because she expressed to me that sometimes they tell you things that are coming in the future that they're already aware of. And so in March of last year, on March 1st, was when I started the whole probate process. And so I kind of made the assumption that, oh, that's what he was referring to. Like, okay, like March is here. everything is going to get wrapped up. And I thought it would be a much quicker process. And obviously it took a year. And so then when I revisited that post today and I realized, oh my gosh, like 2 days ago, we were done. Like the estate is closed. He was obviously alluding towards everything will be wrapped up in March, because here we are entering into March and everything's done.
Wow.
So
Yeah, that's just
chills again.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does, though. It does bring such comfort. They are there somehow with us, yes. You know?
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing with March right now for you, which is, you know, like what we want to hear all about is, you know, you're starting your surviving stigma.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's like a huge thing for you. And I would think it's going to be so helpful for you and so many people. You know, I mean, yeah. He could have even known that, you know, that could be wrapped up in there.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. I think you are so correct. Absolutely. Because, you know, when I went into that reading, I like so many questions I had, and it was like, what the hell am I doing? What am I supposed to do? Like, what is going on? Like, am I capable of doing this? And there was a lot of confirmation of like, you're going to be okay. Like, just trust in yourself. And so I had never even thought of that. So thank you for putting that in my mind, because you could be very right, because I'm very excited about this and what I'm bringing to this grief community of women who are navigating a similar path, you know?
Well, so tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the idea of surviving stigma, you know, when I lost Doug to the overdose, you know, it felt really isolating. And I always like to say and remind people, you know, it wasn't no fault to anybody. I know sometimes people can take it as a personal attack if somebody may have judgment or may misunderstand or may look at you differently or have a negative response. But I feel after years of working in recovery that oftentimes it's just simply a lack of experience, which I pray for everybody that they don't have to experience the pains of addiction and alcoholism. But it also really isolated me. You know, these little bits of misinformation or lack of education or lack of understanding because they've never had to walk in my shoes or anybody else's shoes who's experienced this, mm-hmm. left me feeling like I couldn't talk about it. You know, I felt like my loss was minimized because oftentimes people would say things as if like, well, your husband chose to die, you know, his decisions, his choices, you know, that is why he died, which.
Okay. And they're not looking at it as a disease.
No, yeah. No, not yeah. at all. And sure. Yes. Doug took action, but Doug was an amazing, heartfelt. He was a wonderful dad, a wonderful friend, a beautiful partner to me. He was my best friend, and he had a lot of hurt. You know, he had a lot of trauma that, you know, oftentimes men don't have that space to tease back those things and talk about them. And so he harbored a lot of pain that was internalized a lot. And a lot of people don't realize that yes, this is a chemical imbalance in the brain. It is a disease. It's something that the person struggling, they don't want to be struggling with it. You know, Doug in a million years would have never wanted this to be his story, our story. And I felt so called to curate a space where women like myself navigating the same could come together and be able to talk about the really tough aspects and the layers of this, because there was a lot of anticipatory grief even before the loss, but was so different than maybe caregiving or somebody who knew their person was going to die. Because even though I wasn't aware Doug was going to die, I grieved him long before he did, because this sickness took him so far away from me.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, you know, so much of what you're saying, you know, rings true for me. You know, we've got, you know, I've got addiction in my family. And it's generational, even, you yeah. know, you talk about, you know, and I mean, my dad certainly wouldn't mind me sharing, you know, he's been in AA for 40 years,
amazing.
You know, and it just, oh God, see, I'm going to cry already, you know,
that's okay.
It's okay. But you know what, you know, I think about it and I'm like, you know what, I don't know that I've ever told him how how just proud I am of him for of that, you know, because it's I can't imagine, it's hard, you know, every day you got to go, okay. I mean, you know, he's very much the one day at a time, you know, and he was like, I'm not drinking today, you know, and now obviously it's been so long and you know, and he goes to the weddings and, you know, he's probably like, oh Jesus, there's Chris making a fool of herself. But you know what? He's never judged me for, you know, the things and, you know, my siblings have gone through some stuff too. And, that when you said that anticipatory, I've had, you know, family members where you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm afraid I'm going to get a call because of the road that you're going down right now, you know, and thankfully, you know, everybody's doing well, but it's such a powerless feeling where you want to help, but you don't know how. And yeah, I mean, that just spoke to me for sure.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and I don't know if I've ever shared this with y'all too. I don't know if we got into this the last time we talked. I'm in recovery myself. So I will pick up 13 years in a month, actually. My sobriety date is April 1st.
That is fantastic. So, congratulations to you.
Thank you. So that's actually, you know, how Doug and I met, was in the rooms of AA and when we were in early recovery. And, you know, it's so interesting because one thing I like to talk about is it's a daily thing, you know, and what became Doug's downfall was we moved away from the community and we stopped looking at it like that. You know, we stopped looking at it like, okay, just one day at a time. And it became this, you know, we're going to drink socially, whatever. And unfortunately it took Doug down a much different path. But it is, it's a life, like you said, it's a lifelong thing and it's a generational thing. And that's something that, you know, I think about every single day with my kids, you know, it is an everyday thing that I look at them. I'm like, oh my gosh, not only have you guys now experienced this trauma that has going to change your life forever, but you also have parents who come from a line of alcoholism, addiction, mental health struggles. And how can I do my best to parent you guys in a supportive way that they have an understanding and feel safe? And sure, I mean, we've all been to high school. My kids are probably going to make some poor decisions and they may get in trouble, and that's okay. But my goal is, you know, to keep an open, honest dialogue with them as long as I can so that they know that they can always come to me and that this is something that is, like you said, a lifelong thing, and it's scary and it shouldn't be quieted or not talked about.
Yeah. And right. I think just the fact that, you know, you talking about it and, you know, starting, you know, this class and stuff, I think maybe it starts to chip away at the stigma, you know what I mean? Cause people can be so damn judgy, you know,
yes,
they really can. And, I just think that you're honoring him and all of what you've done through this. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about it, Shelley and I, before. It's like, what else are we here for if not to help each other?
Right.
You know?
Just from seeing your posts, it seems like people have just kind of flocked to you, you know, because you have been brave enough to put it out there.
Yeah.
Everybody is probably just so happy that you are, you know, putting it out there.
Yeah. And, you know, it was something that I actually made my first post really diving deep into the way Doug died a year ago. I was like the last week in February or something, I think. And it was simply because there was so much gossip. You know, there was so many people making assumptions. There were so many things being said. And I was like, you know what? Like, I feel called to clear the air, but also to seek out other women who are navigating the same, who are feeling judged or misunderstood, or that they can't share their truth for the fear of being judged or misunderstood. And it really, you know, has turned into this beautiful thing. It was never, really, honestly, never my intention to curate a community or anything. I just wanted to find other people who were going through the same that could witness my grief, you know, and I just spoke from my heart, and it has been really beautiful and eye-opening. And it was like, okay, Julia, you should know this. I mean, I've been in and out of AA for years. You know, I went to meetings for many years. I don't actively go to meetings right now, but that's how you find healing, through being vulnerable, through being honest, through sharing with others who may relate. And it really has been so healing for me. I mean, gosh, I've met hundreds of women now navigating the same, who were just looking for a hand to hold, who say, to say, it's okay, I get it, I'm here with you.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's such a brave thing, because it's hard to be vulnerable. It's hard to put yourself out there.
Yes.
Because like I said, we're worried about what other people think. And I think probably you sharing it, you know, gave other people courage to come out and mm-hmm. say, hey, me too, you know, or
right.
this is what my story is. And I think I would just imagine that there's just so many people that you've inspired to, like you said, speak their truth when maybe they wouldn't. Sometimes it's like, all right, you go first. And then you're brave enough because somebody else did it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's been really healing for them as well, whether it's just me who's bearing witness to their truth and these deep, dark, painful things they've walked through, then at least, you know, one person has heard them, which can be so life-saving. And I kind of even take that back to like what Doug was navigating and all the pain he was holding on to here at the end before he died. And it was like, ah, if he could have just had one person that he felt safe enough to share with.
Yes.
Would he still be here with us right now? Like, I don't know, but I would think, you know, if he hadn't felt so shunned by friends and people in his life, like, where would we be today? Would I even be talking to you guys? I don't know. And so I really do hope in sharing, like you said, that I can help soften the stigma or break it down a little bit, because somewhere along the line, I feel like we lost the humanness that we're meant to have and caring for other people and supporting other people. And, you know, we're all battling something, whether or not it's alcoholism or addiction. You know, we all have hurt and pain, and we all need support and love without judgment. And so I really do hope this helps not only the families, but also the people still suffering who are drinking and using, who need to, that maybe our story could help, because they see that these people do care about you and there is a way out, or unfortunately it could end in the most awful way.
Yeah. And you know, I think to your point too, with men, you know, I mean, and I guess I'm just speaking for myself, but you know, I feel like women have, we communicate so much. We talk about our feelings. Mm-hmm. I don't know, not that maybe we're more comfortable with it, but I definitely see where men, in that kind of way, maybe that emotional way or whatever, could be more isolated because they just function differently, you know, or like, well, I don't want to be vulnerable. I'm a man, I'm strong, or you know what I mean? I mean, I'm obviously, you know, that's a bit of a hyperbole, but I think there's definitely something to that. And it just brings me back to my husband. I've mentioned it a couple of times before. He had a men's group that he got involved in, and I cannot tell you what that did for him. Now, this was even, you know, prior to him having cancer, but just, you know, they worked out together, but they would kind of talk through working out. I mean, so it was kind of, you know, the workout was sort of the reason why, I guess, they got together. But he just formed these really deep friendships. And I just thought it was, you know, they would come over, of course, you know, when Jay was sick, and, you know, they'd leave and be like, hey, man, I love you, man. You know, and I just don't think you hear that enough maybe from men.
Right.
And, you know, to your point that it helped Jay be less isolated. I mean, obviously this is a different situation for sure, but I definitely see that, you know, men do need a place to be able to do what we do, you know, as women who, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm making any sense at all.
No, you're making sense.
Yeah.
We've even, you know, kind of talked about it. You know, we both have teenage boys, and just like our daughters are just way more open. And, you know, I mean, I think it's just, I don't know, but maybe there's women like that too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I
totally get what you're saying.
But I mean, yeah, true. If I ask Katie, you know, hey, how was your day? She's like, well, this happened. Blah, blah, blah.
And then
and he's like, fine.
Right.
I was like, well, what'd you do? Nothing. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, yeah. I'm like, give me something, son, you know?
Well, and I think about that with my little ones, you know, I mean, they're only 3 and 7. And even my 7-year-old, I'm like, what did you do today in school? He's like, I don't know. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I just picked you up. How do you not know? And he's like, I mean, we did stuff. I'm like, great. Okay.
Right. Right.
Wonderful. You know, and I agree with y'all so much. I think it's so important. And I think, you know, oftentimes there's just, you know, from my experience, even with walking Doug through this, you know, there would be oftentimes that he felt so much shame because he felt like it's my job to be the provider, the protector, and I'm letting my wife down. I'm letting my kids down. And so he held on to so much shame that it was like he didn't want to show that part on top of it because yep. He knew that we were watching what was happening and we felt that. And so, you know, there was a few times that he would open up and be like, I'm just so ashamed of myself. Like, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even want to dive into this. Like, I know that what I'm doing is not good, you know, like these painful layers. And I think a lot of times that's it, kind of what you said, where it's like they want to, they put this pressure on themselves to be this strong pillar, this, you know, stand up man and all these things when it's okay. Like, you know, I tell my boys all the time, it's okay to have emotion. It's okay if you're feeling upset about your dad dying. You don't just need to shove it all down and put it in a box. Like, mm-hmm. we can talk about it, you know, but I feel like oftentimes it is shoved under the rug, and hopefully we can change that in some ways with allowing more safe spaces for our children, for our boys. And in the future, maybe that can be a little different, but I really do think there is a lot of truth in that the men need just as much support. And yes, us women are definitely more chatty and not afraid to speak.
Well, and know? Now, you know, we're the head of the household, and I know the weight that I carry around just of the worry and the stress and the finances. And to your point, it's like, well, I'm the breadwinner. I'm going to do this, you know, the man. And there's got to be a lot of pressure for that, you know what I mean?
And I don't know that I ever really realized that before, like when Jeremy was here, I don't know that it even crossed my mind that he had that pressure because, you know, I never thought of it that way when he was here until now that it's me.
Yeah. Now I'm like, man, this is, and granted we are doing it alone and they had us. Yeah.
Right.
You know, so I know it's not exactly the same, but the differences between, you know, the genders with emotions, it brings up, I remember when we told the kids, you know, that Jay wasn't getting any better, you know, I mean, we had found out hospice and, you know, we sat them down. And I mean, Katie bawled and bawled and just held on to Jay and just say, I cannot not cry. And Will just sat there, didn't say a word.
Yeah.
I mean, even, and Shelley would remember this, at Jay's funeral service, Will didn't cry. He did that thing with, you know, he put his like thumb and his pointer finger, you know, pushed against his eyes. And that was it. Mm-hmm. You know, where Katie would just was, you know, I'm hugging her and she's crying and I'm crying and I just wonder, you know, and he, gosh, Will was what, 12 or something? And I wonder, like, is it just, how do we just not realize it's happening? Is it like a societal thing? You know, like, I never said to him, like, no, don't cry, buddy, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And yet, was there something in him that felt like, okay, well, I'm the man now. I have to be strong. I can't cry, you know? And I've had that conversation with him, like, son, if you want to cry, you can cry. And he's like, oh, mom, I have. He's like, but I don't do it in front of you and Katie. And I don't know if it's because he's embarrassed or if he's, and I said, you can always cry. I was like, you know me, I'm crying every day about something. You know? Happy tears, sad tears, all of it, you know?
Yes.
But I just found that was interesting. He's like, no, I do. I just, you know, do you not want to? Do you think it's going to make you feel weak or appear weak? You know what I mean? And which we know it's not.
Right.
But,
you know, something that my 7-year-old said to me that was like so eye-opening about this. And I'm like, you're 7 and you're saying this to me. Like, what? Where did you, you know, just it blew my mind because I was talking to his therapist kind of about the same, about how he seems very just he seems okay. You know, at school, they're like, oh, Noah's great. He's resilient. He's doing so well. And I'm like, okay, well, at home, like, I see opposite. So, you know, obviously at school, he puts on, you know, his school suit and goes and does what he needs to do. But one of the things he said to me and to his therapist as well is like, well, Mom, you're already so sad. I don't want to make you more sad when I'm sad.
God bless
I think
him.
That could be-
And I said, you know what, Noah? I said, it's not your job to worry about me being more sad. If you want to be sad, you can be sad too, because this is really sad. Your dad died, you know, but it was so eye-opening to me to hear this come out of the mouth of a young child, where it was like, he's so worried about caretaking me. And then it kind of dove even deeper into that of like, you know, him trying to figure out his role now that his dad's not here anymore. And how for years when his dad was travel, he would say, you know, okay, Noah, take care of Mom. You're the man of the house now, you know, just sweet little sentiments. Well, now that's really how he feels. Like, I have to take care of Mom. And so that's been something we've really worked through and will continue to work through. I'm like, buddy, all your job to do is to be a kid and to love me as my kid. Like, you don't have to take care of Mom's emotions. You don't have to worry about that. Like, I'm okay, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's just, that was really eye-opening to me in a lot of ways. Cause I'm like, damn, a seven-year-old, like, he's even feeling that. So these older kids, I can imagine, are feeling some of the same, I would think, you know?
Yes. I always thought that with Bice. Like, it was kind of like he felt like he needed to protect me, you know, there for a while. And he, I mean, you know, he was nine when Jeremy died. I think he sort of, the same thing, like he tried to protect my emotions. Yeah, I totally think that's a thing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And
for
I probably didn't realize, you know, like your kids are so lucky to have you. Like, I probably didn't realize that at that time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So. You know, I don't think I made it worse at all, but, you know, I just didn't, I didn't probably realize that at the time and just maybe didn't, you know, encourage it, encourage the opposite enough. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Hindsight's 20/20 too, well, though, because you're in the middle of it. You're just doing the best you can do. And, and, you know, we find out so much more when we reflect on things like, oh, you know, with experience and time, just, I don't know if wisdom's the right word, but, you know, and you just know that you're doing the best you could at that moment. I mean, I know I've messed up and I feel like times I've been selfish in my grief, like I've been, you know, where I'm like, wait a minute, you know, I need to take care of the kids. And am I being selfish because I'm so damn sad that I just. Getting up and getting out of bed and going to work sometimes is just all I had in me, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think, reflecting on that, like even like you're saying, you can reflect back on so much. And even with like what I'm navigating and losing Doug, like you said, hindsight 2020, I think often, you know, could it have been this? Could it have been that? And so when it comes to this as well with the kids, because I for sure have not been my best self with parenting two young ones. You guys know toddlers are a lot. And so it's definitely been a process. And I think we are all doing beautiful jobs, but it's definitely a day-by-day thing. Just kind of like what you were saying, even with navigating recovery, I feel like grief is the exact same thing, moment by moment.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what I've said to people. I'm like, it's sometimes it's day-by-day, sometimes it's minute by minute, you know, I don't even know how to explain it.
I don't even know that time changes that because, you know, here I am almost 10 years in and I still feel that way.
Yeah. You just never know. And we've talked about this before, like the waves of grief, when they're going to hit you and why. I was getting my nails done yesterday and I don't know, they were playing some song in the nail salon. So, you know, I got my hands in the, you know, she's painting one nail and then the other one's like, you know, in the solution or whatever. I start crying and I'm so embarrassed because I can't even wipe my tears. I'm trying to like, and these women were probably like, what in the hell is there? She's just here getting her nails done, for God's sake. She's like, you like the color, right? I'm like, no, everything's cool. It's not you, you know? But I'm like, what am I going to say? Like, well, actually, I don't know this song. And,
yeah,
well, you know, my husband. And so I didn't obviously get into it, but it's like, you know, I was so embarrassed about it. You know, again, I walked into the nail salon. I was feeling fine, getting my nails done. And
but you don't need to feel embarrassed about it either.
No,
I guess not. But I mean, I guess, you know, you're just, I can't imagine what this poor woman was thinking. You know, she's like, Jesus.
Like, I promise I'm okay.
Right? Usually people like getting their nails done.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Back to the class. Could you give us a little bit about some of kind of either the topics or things that you're going to be covering?
Yeah. 100%. So, you know, when I was sitting down really envisioning what I wanted this container to look like, you know, I really wanted it to be a space, like I said, that these women could come and share their stories without feeling like they were different than anybody else. Because I get so many messages from women being like, oh, I was in this grief group and I really struggled because, you know, these people had this beautiful marriage and this beautiful partnership and their husband died in a car wreck and, or their husband died of cancer and they got to walk them through that. And I feel envious or I feel different because that wasn't my experience. You know, my marriage, I loved my husband, but my marriage was hard, or, you know, there was really painful, confusing things that happened that I didn't feel safe enough to share, you know, and I'm embarrassed to share. And so that was really, you know, kind of the bottom nest egg of what I wanted this to be. And then as I sat down, I mean, you guys know I'm a meditation facilitator, yoga teacher, all the different energy, somatic kind of work I do. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I really want to be able to factor this in here too. And so really kind of the outline of it, of the 10, 11 weeks we're going to be together, is essentially I'm going to give these women, you know, topics each week that we can kind of dive into, you know, give them a chance to share their story, really get to know them, get to know their person, but then hold space in the capacity of, let's tease this back and talk about why we feel like our losses are so stigmatized and what has kind of made us feel like we're quote unquote different than somebody else navigating grief, and looking at the different statistics behind mental health and addiction. And like I said before, kind of talking about our own anticipatory grief that maybe looked different than y'all's, but, you know, we still walked through that as well. And one week we're really going to dive into trauma and how this affects our nervous system, and me providing these women with tools of gentle somatic practices or breath work that can help identify maybe the different nervous system states they're in. And Shelley, I don't know if you ever got to do the heart chakra meditation back in embodied grief, but that's one of my favorite meditations because our heart centers are all centered around grief, which we all know. And in this meditation, it's really beautiful. It gives us a chance to kind of build a space for our loved ones and our hearts. And so we'll be doing things like that and essentially just talking about how we can move forward and seeking the connection and kind of talking about what y'all and I talked about at the beginning of this call, the way we stay connected to our person, you know, and just really having a chance for us to all bear witness to one another and for me to hold space. And I'm really excited. We're almost completely full. There's one more seat left. And I think we're going to have a full 12 women with us. And I'm really looking forward to it.
That's fantastic too. And I just, like the meditation, with my grief counselor, we did some of that meditation and stuff like that. Yeah. And what I've found is because, you know, there's a lot of anxiety in being, you know, the provider, the kids, you know, everything. And that tools like that can help you go, okay, yeah, you can be anxious, but here, you can deal with it. There's ways to deal with it, you know.
Yeah, right.
That'll help you.
Yeah.
Your class was the first time I had ever done any of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's such a great thing.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's, I'm such a firm believer in kind of, you know, just bringing us in to our bodies. You know, each time we get together, we will kind of meditate and drop into the space and you know, I just want them to be able to be aware of maybe where the emotion is hiding in their bodies and let them know that it's okay. Like, it's okay to be angry and it's okay to be sad, or it's okay to feel joy or whatever you may be embodying in this moment, in this day, as you process it, it'll be okay. And then I'm also really excited. I don't know if y'all are familiar with Annie Parker. Her account is I Did Not Kill My Husband. I don't know if either one of you have heard of her account.
I think I have.
Yeah. One thing I'm really excited about is my dear friend Annie, her handle is I Did Not Kill My Husband, is coming on to speak about Al-Anon. She is a beautiful advocate for Al-Anon and how it really helps people who are still in the trenches with their loved one alive, navigating alcoholism and addiction, and then even after their death, how Al-Anon has really impacted her life. So 1 week she's coming on to speak, and I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Wow, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm happy you and these other women are going to have this space. That's what I'm trying to say.
And Shelly and I talked about this a little bit too, like on the way here, and kind of to your point, like, you know, grief is grief, but it's like, this is like an added layer that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that's just going to be so impactful for these women, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you for acknowledging that and saying that, because I feel like sometimes we feel bad even saying that, you know what I mean? Because it's not a competition. Like you said, grief is grief. We're all navigating something so terrible and horrible, but there is other pieces to it, you know? And these women can come here and share pieces that maybe seem confusing to other people. You know, some of them may feel relief that their person is no longer here. And to other people, that may sound really messed up, but they could have been living in so much trauma and so much chaos for so long that now their life, they miss their person, but their life feels calm. And that's very confusing, you know? Yes. And unless you've lived that and walked that, it doesn't make sense, you know? Right. And so I'm really looking forward to just being able to hold their hearts and just spend time with them. And I think it's going to be really powerful. And I'm just really honored that you guys wanted to hear about it and chat about it, because that means a lot to me too.
Well, like I said, I'm just so impressed, first of all, by your writing. I mean, it's just, as an English teacher, I'm like, oh my gosh, just the eloquence and the way you can put what I fail sometimes into words. And I'm like, how does someone, how can you do that? That's exactly how I feel, you know? Right. And I think you have a gift, and the fact that you're sharing this gift is just, I just think it's a wonderful thing. It really is.
Well, thank you so much. And I will tell y'all one thing. So I did meet with another medium back in December. I guess that's usually when I meet with mediums. So right before Christmas this year. And one of the things I said, she was like, what do you want to ask Doug? And I was like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Like, what am I doing? And she was like, he just keeps saying, write the book.
Wow. Write the book. Oh my gosh. Chills again.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's something, I mean, since I was a child, let me tell you, I always said someday I would be an author, but you know, I never thought it'd be anything. So, you know, if I'm getting that little nudge from him, hopefully someday there will be a book and I will say I wrote the book because Doug told me to.
Oh my gosh.
God, and I'm telling you what, now I'm going to be the first one to go out there and buy it too. I'll tell you that.
You know, because just in my head, every time I read one of your posts, it crosses my mind every single time I read one. Dang, she needs to write a book. Mm-hmm. She really needs to write a book.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all are so sweet. I appreciate you guys so much.
I've always kind of thought I could write a book, but then I see like your writing and I'm like, I probably can't write a book.
You probably could. You got give you yourself could. More credit, Shell.
My book would suck.
No, it wouldn't.
No.
I'd read it.
Yes, I would too. You'd have two people who would buy it.
Oh gosh. Oh, well, that's all just so exciting. Thank you so much for being here. It's like so good to catch up, and
yes, and we will do this again for sure.
We can hear
how everything's gone, and
yes. I wish we lived closer and we could just like hang out.
I know.
Me too.
But
me
maybe
too.
One of these days we'll take a road trip.
I was just going to say.
Yes, come to Austin. We'd love it.
I've never been to Austin.
Oh, such a great town.
All right. Well,
I will take you out. It would be so fun. I would love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much again. We will talk soon.
And get started on that book.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll talk to y'all later.
All right. Absolutely. Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow. I just always love talking to her so much.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so great. So if you listeners haven't followed her, I definitely recommend it. She's on Instagram at Julia Envisions, and her posts are just amazing. They're so, well, you know.
Yeah, and I think you could, anybody could get something out of her posts and the things she said. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a widower, or right. You know, we've all experienced loss in some capacity, mm-hmm. and she just has a way with words, and it's just,
yes,
you will not regret following her. That's
yes,
for sure.
She's beautiful. Everything she posts is beautiful. So at Julia Envisions. Thank you for listening. You can get in touch with us on Facebook or Instagram at Dare to Live Podcast, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And remember to subscribe and share. Leave us a rating or a review. We always love your feedback. And we will chat again soon.
Thanks, y'all.